All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 41 in this Ancient History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. Today is a writing class. So we moved History Through Art to yesterday so that we could all of us make preparations for today's effort that will be a collective effort. And your part of it was to read the week 13 and 14 class notes in order to get that context in the front of your minds and pull that content into the forefront of your thinking so you'd be ready to discuss it today. And my responsibility was to get these week 15 class notes onto the class webpage, which, as you can see, I've done. So just recently posted on there, but they're all there. So today we're going to look at this content from week 13 all the way through now to week 14, which ends with the birth of democracy. And we are going to write the story of this progression of events. And this is really crucial for us as learners of history, as students of the past, as people who want to understand how the past matters. We need to learn how to tell the story of the past. Up to this point, we've been focused on two things. Up to this point, we started off, you'll recall, at the beginning of the year, we started off with anchor facts. And that is certainly the best place to start, especially with regard to ancient history. So we learned a bunch of things like democracy was invented in 508 BC in Athens. And that's an anchor fact of history. Which means what? Why did we do that? Why do we bother with facts like that in order to get started in history? What is an anchor fact? Crucial review issue here. What's an anchor fact, Juliet?
They connect the past to us now, today.
Perfect. An anchor fact is an event from history which has so much of an impact on shaping the world that it connects past and present. I mean, it shows us that the world around us came to be the way that it is because of the past, because of what happened in the past. So, for instance, democracy, which is such a huge issue, it is the number one political watchword in the world today. Why? How do people get that in their head? Why is the world like that? Well, because demos means people, and kratia means the rule, and those are Greek words, and it comes from Greece, and the only people who ever came up with this idea, there can only ever really be one, but in this case, sometimes people can do things in parallel, and you can have kind of coincidental inventions and things like that, right? But they invented democracy, and ever since, there has been a record of what they did that has affected how people think about the world. And so we now are at a juncture in history where this has become the leading political concept. Nemo is chatting that he bemoans that fact somewhat because I completely agree, republic is a way better concept than democracy, but it's a subtle and ingenious improvement, and most people don't get that. And certainly, if you want to really get the most out of history, you need to understand the difference. And you need to understand that the fact that democracy today is the watchword of politics is not a good sign. It's not. It's a reflection of the fact that today we are regressing in our political thinking. And that's a huge idea. That is a huge thought. And it is not a happy thought. Because if we were clearer in our understanding of history, if we were better educated, and then we would be able to draw the distinction between different types of things that are done in politics today. And we wouldn't be the victims of a lot of things, a lot of changes that are occurring that are negative. Changes that are primarily driven by democracy, which is the rule of the majority. We are acting towards each other precisely in the way that the founding fathers, especially James Madison, was super clear on this. We keep on breaking ourselves up into factions and ruling each other over various issues. And this is no different than archaic life. And yet here we are. We got all the science. We got all the tech. We got all the STEM subjects, and everybody's got their degrees and is going to college. And aren't we so sophisticated, and aren't we so modern? But meanwhile, we're slipping in the most important area. People look at each other and they don't see fellow human beings. They see members of factions. And it's not good. It's very dangerous. You can see how we have this factional type of thinking. We have a big controversy going on in the world, which has to do with how to treat Muslims in Western societies. Well, if you are a factionalist, and you can see which ones they are out there in the world today, then what you do is you look at people and you see them as members of a group, and you insist on treating them as members of a group. And you can see the politicians that think that way today. I won't take sides on that one. But if you are an individualist, then you will look at the issue very differently. And you will want to understand that the world is full of well over a billion Muslims who are not terrorists. And you will understand that you can't possibly treat the people who follow a particular religion. And people always follow religions in a multiplicity of ways. You can't possibly group them and say that they are all the same, and thus must be all treated the same, and that basically it's a factional issue. It's something like America versus Islam. That is a ridiculous oversimplification. So this is kind of, I want to give you a potent example here of how we're slipping back into factional thinking. It's getting stronger these days. Along racial lines, along religious lines, along gender lines, along a whole bunch of really distasteful ways of dividing people up into different and separate groups that want to have power over each other. That's the way we're thinking. Well, that's no better than people used to think 3,000 years ago, 4,000 years ago. And yes, Nemo, a republic is the profound, ultimate opposite of that, insofar as it recognizes the humanity and ultimate worth of each individual who has a right to pursue his happiness. If you can have that, if you could have that combined with all the wonderful science and technology that we have, then yes, the world would be an amazing and wonderful place. And it's not impossible, but there's work to be done. Because right now, democracy is the number one political idea. So, anyway, but this is all history, right? I mean, that's why I love history, because to me it's so fascinating. How do we get to where we are? And in particular, my favorite subject is, how do we do better? How do we go from where we are now to a better place? Rather than repeat the mistakes of the past, factionalism especially, and similar issues, how do we guide people? I'm a teacher, so I like to the thought that I can teach people to think more clearly. Show them the value of the past, and well, let them loosen the world, because if you can think clearly about it, then you won't fall for a lot of the stuff that's going around today. and you'll be the kind of person that helps the world to be a better place, rather than just goes with the flow and participates in a lot of the trends nowadays, which are quite negative. So, yeah, this is, but how do we do that? How do we get command of the material of the past so that we can have that power? Anchor facts are not enough. Anchor facts are just the beginning. I mean, they're fantastic. And I don't think that anybody that doesn't know the anchor facts of history has any clue about history. Basically, that's my view, is that would be, if I wanted to talk to anybody about history, the first thing I would do is I would ask them to name their anchor facts. I would say, tell me what the anchor facts of history are. And of course, they wouldn't know what I'm saying, but I would say then, tell me what the, give me a list, 5 to 10 most important events ever in history. And then I would want to see what they would say. And that would be the basis of a discussion. And if you can't even make a list like that, then you don't have a clue what history is. So that would be, that's the easiest way to figure out whether or not somebody's worth talking to or not. And you got to have the anchor facts. That's like the starting point. You don't have those, you don't have anything. But then on the other hand, if that's all you have, that's not good enough. Because all you've got is a bunch of separate kind of tethers between something in the past and you here now. Those are good, right? But you've got a tether between you and 508 BC. And you've got another tether linking you to 1492. And you got another tether, and it links you to circa 4 BC. And so on, right? But basically what you've got there is a bunch of straight lines and between you and the past, and, well, that's it. It's not enough. It's not enough because what you're missing is the connections between the things in the past themselves. Now, we already worked on the connections a little bit. We did a writing assignment earlier in the year to try to weave together the anchor facts. That's really crucial. That's good. But there's more to it. That's still only, you know, that's like step two. Knowing the anchor facts, step one. Weaving them together into an anchor fact narrative, that would be like step two. But then, there's something else. We don't have that yet. And you know, there's always a next level, right? There's always a greater expertise. There's always a better understanding. There's always more. There is always more. That's the way it is. And that's part of the joy, because you look at that and you say, oh, it's funny, because one of the differences between kids and grown-ups, to me, to my mind, and between a kind of a childish mind and a mature mind, a childish mind says, I know what I'm talking about. A childish mind, you know, my son is 9 years old, he's a really smart kid, but he more often than not, he will say that he knows something, right? That's what's the most important thing to him, is that he'll contradict me, or he will correct me, or he will insist that something's a little bit different than what I said, because the most important thing to him is to know something. And that's kind of the state of development of a child, is just, I gotta know. But then what's interesting is, here I am, much older, and I know a lot more, and guess what interests me the most? Not the stuff that I know. The horizon that's in front of me, that now I can see more clearly than ever, and this thing that is my humanity, which allows me to relish the idea that I have more learning to do, and that there's a never-ending opportunity for me to grow, to learn, to become better than I am now. That's my perspective. To me, that's the mark of a certain intellectual maturity. It's kind of like Socrates. Socrates said, I don't know anything. That's the only thing I know, is I don't know anything. I think that was an unfortunate exaggeration. But it was that kind of intellectual humility that says, what I want is to learn. I want to have the right posture towards the world, because it's an amazing, wonderful place to be, and I want to know more. And I'm never going to stop. Never. The people that I have admired the most in my life have always been like that. They don't just settle into a job and then go through the mechanics of life. What they do, they might be in a job, but the better opportunity is to grab a career, to figure out a field that interests you, that where you see that there's a never-ending series of opportunities to learn more and to become better by choosing that. And you never stop. And so here you are in history. You got your anchor facts. You got a few connections. You got a little bit of knowledge here. Wow, you're just at the beginning. You have to now, here's the next step, which we're going to do together. You've got to learn to tell the story. Simple as that. The next step in your learning is learning to understand history for the story that it is. A story is a logical progression of events. A story is a connected series of events. It makes sense. History isn't just something that happens. Oh, and then look, whoa, completely accidentally, never could have predicted that, something else happens. Oh, and then look, bam, a new thing happened. And then look, oh, where'd those guys come from? I don't know. Where'd they get that from? Oh, I don't know. Something else happened. Right? It's not just X happens, Y happens, Z happens. It's not just a bunch of stuff that happens. It's a logical progression. So things like democracy, that happened, yeah, okay. We know when. And we know that it matters. Okay, we've got those things set up for ourselves now. But how? How'd that happen? How do human beings get there? Right? That's the next level of understanding. Being able to tell the story. So, let me for a moment here stage what we're going to do. I think I need to do just one thing before I proceed here. Yes, I need to do this. Excuse me for a sec while I just make one last preparation. Okay, good. I'm going to bring up a document here so that we can have a discussion about the story and work as a team to basically explain this story. One more sec and I'll be ready to go. Perfect. Okay, here we go. Share my screen again. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to write a story. And in order to give you a boost so that you know what to write about and that so that you are focused, we're going to do two things. One, as previously, I'm going to give you the theme of the story in the form of the first sentence of the story that you're going to tell. If you want to, you can simply copy and paste this, and it will be the first sentence of your story. If you feel really strongly that you want to improve this sentence or stylize it in your own way, you can modify it. But it needs to say essentially this. This is the theme of the story. The idea of democracy, which most people cherish today, was born in ancient Athens, circa 508 BC, after a long struggle to rise up from the archaic plateau. Okay, that's the story that we're going to tell. And this is what you need to be able to tell in order to have a kind of substantial understanding of this anchor fact. If all you've got is the anchor fact, it is torn out of context and it will not really help you. Is just going to be what I call an atomic fact all by itself, a little atom of information. You will have a little bond between that atom and you because it's an anchor fact, but that's not enough. What you want to turn this into is a constellation of knowledge, all connected, with bonds of nice storytelling, kind of richness, which says, yeah, I know how that happened. Let me tell you how the world got its first democracy. You know, this is the kind of thing that you want to be able to do in talking to others. Of course, it's primarily for your own benefit. You want to be able to say, yeah, I get how people got there. I understand this. This initial rise that human beings undertook to come from the archaic plateau and to bring us to this level, which now we enjoy so greatly in modern times. It's so much better. Here's how we did it. Here's how human beings first did it in Athens. Okay? So what we're going to do is today, over the next half hour or so, I imagine, right, is as a team, we're going to tell that story. Or we're going to outline it. We're going to outline it as a team, and then that will serve as the basis for a paragraph writing, or a written paragraph that each of you individually will produce, starting from the same outline, but then it's going to be up to you to take that outline and wordsmith it, right? Take it and turn it into a polished narrative, whereby, for your own sake, and for anybody else that you might like to transmit it to, the story of how this came about is encapsulated in an integrated narrative. That's what you're going to have. Okay? And hopefully, if that's compelling to you, if it sticks, if it's got some good meat there, that and the connections are strong, then they become almost by themselves, without any additional effort, they become resilient. They become persistent in your thinking. You'll remember the story, in other words, without necessarily having to memorize it, right? You'll just know it. You'll say, oh yeah, 508 BC. Oh yeah, that's just the end of a story. It starts here. Certain things happen. There was this important character here. And gradually the Athenians got to this new solution. And oh, let me tell you the story. And that becomes now a part of you. A walking around, individual, educated human being. Okay, so let me suggest here that how to proceed a little bit. We have the end of the story. So I'm going to go ahead and put that. Okay, we have the end of the story. That's where it ends, right? So now, as a team, what I want you guys to do is I want you to tell me, if you're going to tell the story of how this happened, well, what comes here, right? What needs to be a part of this story? And to make it even easier on you guys, I'm going to ask you the very leading question. Where does the story start? We've got the end. What's the beginning? What's the beginning of the story of the rise of democracy? Where's the sensible place to start the story? I only see two hands up. That's not enough. This should not be a mystery. What is the beginning of the story? Let's go back to week 13 here. Is this the beginning? You read the class notes, I'm sure. That was your homework assignment. Is that the beginning? What about this? The Olympics. Is that the beginning? Juliet says, no, okay, good. Somebody at least has an answer here. Okay. Greek geography and so on. Useful beginning? Probably not particularly either. In fact, week 13 is pretty much superfluous to our purpose. All right. So, Cliff, what is the beginning?
Athens after 776.
Okay, but specifically, what about it? What's the beginning of the story of the rise of democracy? Where does Athens begin?
With the Ionians?
That's too broad. That's a tribal issue. We're telling the story of the rise of a certain form of government.
Monarchy to aristocracy. Sorry, I don't know. My voice is a little off. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Aristocracy.
Yeah. Right. All right. Yeah, I should respect that. I myself get laryngitis when I have a cold, so. All right. So, well, it begins with what in particular? You're talking about a progression already. What is the beginning, Nemo?
The beginning is Athens in 776 BC, and the monarchy started.
Okay, the beginning is monarchy. Okay, there we go. In a word, right? So, circa 776 BC, at the beginning of Greek history, Athens had a monarchy. All right, now we have the beginning of the story, and we have the end of the story, and look, all you got to do is fill it in. Okay, so let's go. Tell me something that belongs inside. There's more than one, so if you just shoot at it, you're likely to hit something. So go ahead and tell me something that belongs inside. Okay, Cliff.
753.
Okay, what?
When the Medon today gave up their power so that other aristocrats could become kings.
Okay, so that is a specific part of something, which I think is certainly worth including. Okay, but we have to ask ourselves how many facts we want to include. Right, so we have to be careful about having too many, but you're on the right track. So you're saying something about the Medonidae giving up power, but that's a little bit vague here. What happens? Keen?
I think we need to set the framework for how Athens is organized. It might only take a sentence or two, but just explain the families and explain how the Medonidae were the leading and the ruling family.
Okay, that is part and parcel to this. This is what we haven't, this is what you're, what I see that you're getting at, is that if you say something like, a country had a monarchy, what do you need to do?
You need to explain what that means.
What is it? What is a monarchy?
Because there are monarchies before Athens too, and they weren't exactly the same.
Okay, right. So we have to define a monarchy is the rule of a single person. You know, the king, and the kings of Athens were always members of the Medontidae. All right, so good. That definitely now gives us a little bit of substance in this. All right, this is bare bones. I'm not talking about a flowing narrative here, but I am talking about the kinds of things that of a family, right? You got a called. All right, I'll put a little bit more there for you guys. All right, fine. All right, but we're still stuck with monarchy. Where do we go from monarchy, Abby?
Well, might go down to decennial kingship.
Okay. What do you guys think of that? Let's discuss that. Abby is suggesting decennial kingship. Now, there's something that's good about that, which is that it's true. In other words, that was the next step. Can you think, Abby, why that might be not be the next best step?
I don't know.
Okay, I'll give you a hint. This has to be a paragraph.
So maybe we need something in between?
No, and precisely the opposite. In other words, if you're going to include the detail of decennial kingship as a step towards annual kingship, as a step towards the division of power between multiple archons, and the division of power between the various families, and so on. Guess what you've already got by the time you're done describing that? You've already got a paragraph. So what? You're not even one quarter of the way to democracy and you've already got a paragraph. So where are you going to end up if you're going to include everything, Abby?
You're going to end up with a lot.
Yeah, a whole essay. Exactly, right? You're going to end up with a really long story, which is what you've already got in the class notes. So you got to take the class notes, which look, I mean, the class notes... At this level, this is a lot of stuff. You got a paragraph here, a paragraph's worth here, a paragraph's worth here, right? If you took the class notes and weaved that into a story, took out the headers and just made it into a story, you'd have a 5-page essay. So, no, wow, what do we have to do here? What does that tell us? It tells us we need to be extremely selective, right? So we can't have details like decennial kingship, but we do need a theme here. We do need a progression. We do need this. Cliff?
Is this where you would include the a rebellion that put made it so that other family besides the Medontide could qualify in a kingship?
Yes, but we need that under the header, and we need it to be succinct under a certain header. What is the logical step in the story? It's just this. Athens had a monarchy, and then... Juliet...
It had an aristocracy.
Yeah, and then it went from a monarchy to an aristocracy. Okay, that's what we need. Okay, that's the level of discussion that we have to be pursuing here. Right? So then the Eupatrid families forced the Medonidae to give up power, to share power. Thus creating an aristocracy. Okay? That's the level at which we need to... Because notice, right? We still got a big gap here. We got work to do. And by the time we're done, we're going to have quite a sizable paragraph. So we got to be quite selective. We got to be quite... not just selective, but kind of ruthless, ruthlessly selective in picking our facts here, right? So what do you think about this? What comes next or what flows from this? Something kind of similar to what we had in the first point. What's wrong with a sentence like this? By itself. If you go pick a man on the street and you say to him, "Oh, the Eupatrids forced the Medonidae to share power, thus creating an aristocracy." They're going to think you're crazy, right? So what the heck? Juliet, go ahead.
You have to define aristocracy.
Yeah, you got to explain these terms, right? So the Eupatrids... were the sons of noble fathers. Their aristocracy was the rule of the best. Now, this is an outline, and therefore, you're not going to use this wording, okay? But I'm basically taking the points from our discussion, and I'm injecting them into an outline. Okay, so now we have this kind of interesting progression. We have monarchy was the beginning, and then there was aristocracy, and then there was democracy. Are we done? Juliet says no. Okay, so that's it. We got aristocracy. What else? How about the hoplites here? I don't know if you read this. That was the name of the soldiers, the armored soldiers that participated in the phalanx. Are we going to include them? That's next in the notes, right? What do you guys think? Is that a step forward, Keen?
I think it's another sort of intermediate step that we can maybe just incorporate as part of a bigger statement, a bigger progression.
That's a very good instinct, right? Because it kind of falls into the category of like decennial kingship. It's interesting. The phalanx is interesting. This transformation whereby, you know, more people are getting clout within the system. That's interesting. But it's not carrying us far enough, fast enough, right? So it's not getting us to democracy fast enough. If we include something like that, we're going to end up at democracy after an essay again, which is good. But there's an important value to distilling the story down to its essential progression, the most fundamental changes, and leaving out the others. There's a different level of knowledge that we get by that. And then once we're really good at that level, if you're really good at describing historical sequences like this at a paragraph level, once you master that level, okay, great. Move on. Go to the essay length level, right? And keep going and keep going. There's always more. But we want to start with less here. So I think that's another one that we can move past. What about Cylon tries to become a Tyrannos? What do you guys think of that? Does that carry us towards democracy? Nemo?
No.
Well, you know what? It does. It does. Because what does Cylon's attempt lead to? It leads to the next series of events. It leads to the laws of Draco, the harsh laws of the aristocracy. And those harsh laws of the aristocracy lead eventually to the rebellion of the commoners. So it does lead us there. It does. So if it didn't, I wouldn't include it, by the way. You know, if I thought, hey, this doesn't matter, would I teach it to you guys? No, right? But there is a subtlety involved here. I teach you more than you need to know. And it's up to me and it's up to you together to sift through that and do some thinking. And to say, okay, I get why this is here, but it's really a small step. Because all that we can see is that Cylon leads to Draco. And well, then we got to say, well, where does Draco lead? And again, we're still here. We're stuck on this archaic plateau. So if we're going to get to democracy, we need to keep moving. We need to keep moving. Let's see what comes next. Okay? Aha, Solon. What about Solon? Does that belong in our story? Thoughts? Seen him more recently. Does he belong? I sense that this is a difficult one, which is good. Juliet, what do you think?
I think so, because he tried to fix this big problem but didn't. And then that led to the next part of the story.
What is the next part after Solon?
It was when they they made him, they did other laws after him.
Yeah, but in particular, who became so important after Solon? This is still relatively new, and you didn't have the benefit of these notes last night, so what comes next?
Another Tyrannos.
Yeah, now Solon was not a Tyrannos. Solon was an Archon, given dictatorial power. So he had a special job which was to change the laws of Athens single-handedly. But he was granted that power. So this is by the aristocrats. That's not the same thing. But he did not give the commoners more land or take it away from the aristocrats and give it to them. So that's what led them to say, well, that's not good enough. We want...
They wanted the land.
They want the land. And who's going to give it to us?
It's
hard to pronounce always. Pisistratus. Okay. So now we're getting somewhere. Let's just see if we can follow this through here and plot our course. Solon leads to Pisistratus. Pisistratus leads to what? He's a Tyrannos. He takes land away from the aristocracy. What happens? Yes, the oracle. But Juliet, the oracle's only part of our story. All the interesting details about the oracle and the king of Sparta, that all relates to what, Nemo?
Rebellion.
By whom?
By the commoners and the aristocracy sometimes.
Well, in this particular case, we've got Pisistratus, who's a Tyrannos. So the rebellion comes from where?
The aristocracy.
The aristocracy. Right, we've got the return of the aristocracy. And then when they get into power, well, like Nemo says, this is going to be a cycle, right? This is going to be just the same old thing. Eventually, the harsh laws will lead to a rebellion of the commoners. The commoners will choose a Tyrannos. The Tyrannos will be overthrown. The aristocracy will get control again, reimpose. And where does this get us? Where does this get us? It doesn't get us anywhere. This is what that guy 3,000 years from now, Scott Powell, is going to call the Archaic Plateau. He's going to say we're stuck on it. Because that's what's going on. We're stuck. This is a cyclical kind of history. Cycles in history are a good sign that people are not understanding. They're not able to get progress. They're stuck. Okay, so this is what we have here. We have this progression. We have Solon leads to Pisistratus, Tyrannos, right? Leads to return of aristocracy. But the cycle is broken. All right, that is the progression that we need. Okay, so I just flew through that there based on our discussion. I had to compress that for you guys. But basically, this is the outline of the story. So what you're going to do is, you're going to copy and paste this into your document, and then you're going to take this outline and reread the notes, you know, get your head wrapped around this here. There's nothing self-evident about how to transform this outline into a story. You have to think. You got to put some of your own brain power. If you weren't somebody that was giving us outline points today, then maybe you've got extra thinking to do, because this is somebody else's thinking, and it's not going to be that useful to you unless you do the same thinking. But assuming that you understand what this outline progression is, then you can write it. Turn it into a narrative. Right? And the most crucial thing about that is going to be how you make the connections. how you get one thing to flow into something else, how you explain that Solon leads to Pisistratus. There is a logic involved in how the tyranny of Pisistratus logically leads to the aristocracy resorting to recruiting foreign help, and so on. Now, the last point is tricky because there isn't really a logic to this. That's one of the most interesting things about, not a historical logic, in the sense that the progress in history comes from a magical ingredient. I call it magical because most people think of it kind of as they can't explain it, it doesn't make sense, because it's this wonderful thing all by itself. And it's the spark in the single human mind. And we call it free will. And you can't explain something like democracy. You can explain the Archaic Plateau. And you can say, here was what Cleisthenes was looking at. But what you can't explain is that beautiful thing that happened in his mind. Because that's the free will part. He focused on the problem and thought about it. He sat there and thought about it and came up with his solution. But that innovation involves that magical ingredient of free will, the focused use of the rational mind, and all of a sudden, there's a flowering of progress. So this part here is going to be hard to kind of connect. The rest of it flows very easily. History flows when people are kind of automatons, when they don't really know how to break free of the constraints of all of the forces around them, and they just kind of participate in it kind of like robots. Most people are like that. They kind of are stuck inside of the story of history. They don't shape it. They live in it, and it just happens to them. And you can see the logic of that. And then all of a sudden, somebody brilliant says, not good enough. I am using my own mind. I can see that there's a better way. Right? You can't explain that part. It's just the individual's contribution, which comes from his free will. You can't explain how it is that Isaac Newton could so brilliantly just, wow, with this electrical zap of free will, realize that all the phenomenon of terrestrial motion and celestial motion are all united by the universal force of gravitation. That doesn't come from history. That comes from his brilliant, self-directed mind. And same thing with Cleisthenes. We have here a great thinker, an innovator, comes up with something new and wonderful. But we can at least tell a story of how the Athenians were stuck, they were striving, they were struggling, and then the spark. Juliet, question, comment?
When is the homework due?
It's due on Monday.
Thank you. You have
4 days to do it. Here's how it's going to go. I'm going to print this off and post it to the class webpage immediately for you to use. And then I will send a formal email homework assignment to you and to your parents. Remember last time I asked you want to be on the distribution list? Send me your email address. And some of you guys did that. So you're on it. Your parents are on it. They're going to get an email today. That will confirm the writing assignment, and you have essentially 4 days to do it over the weekend, which is more than enough. It really is about an afternoon's worth of serious work, not more than a couple hours, unless you have some confusions or difficulties, and then you got to spend more time reading, discussing with your parents, figuring things out, sending me a question if you need to, stuff like that. But really, it's very doable. So get it to me by Monday. I will collect those, and we will have a writing discussion next week, possibly on Thursday again, kind of shifting history throughout to Wednesday. And we'll have our writing discussion again, and we'll just see how you did. And we'll go over the logic of the story as told by you. And we as a class will collectively critique and help, you know, each and every one of us to push ourselves a little bit further. Okay? Anything else? Good. Well, this now is going to be, hopefully, this anchoring narrative for you. It's the next level. So 508 BC won't just be a fact that you know. It'll be a story you can tell. Okay, good luck. Have a good weekend, everybody. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Have a good weekend.
You too.